Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Sherry from San Francisco. Welcome, Sherry.
Hi, Michael. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Great to have you on the air. Hey, it's a good thing that you are from San Francisco because on Saturday, many of us were there in San Francisco for the Bridge Walk.
Yes, it was fabulous, wasn't it?
Yes. Tell me your experience.
Well, it's funny because I was actually thinking, even before I knew it was going to be on open air, I was thinking about calling in to the show to talk about my experience because I felt it felt really profound this year in a new way to me.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was a combination of things. I mean, one of the things is obviously just it was amazing having Teresa there.
Yes.
I think that was just so phenomenal. And also I was watching my son, who's now 9, and thinking back to when we first, you know, the very first Bridge Walk and all of them that we've been to, watching him grow up with this group of people and with this particular fundraiser, it felt like a family tradition.
Uh-huh, family tradition. Yeah, because it's, let's see, this is with the 8th annual Bridge Walk. So the first one, Kane would have been 1 or 2 years old.
I know. I remember pushing him in the stroller. That was back when we used to go way up into the headlands. You know, we used to cross the bridge and go way up there. And I can remember. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and this year I just, there was a point where I was just standing there and looking around at everybody in the colors and the satenge and the, you know, familiar faces and just feeling like family reunion, you know?
Yeah, family reunion. So looking around, seeing everybody. And, I've had the same experience of going there year after year and reconnecting with people. And it's a great experience. It's like a reminder of who I am and what's important to me. I go to the Bridge Walk.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can project for you, too, having kids, that there's something really wonderful about being able to invite them into this.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was talking to someone at the San Francisco fundraiser last week, actually, about children and, you know, how to instill that sense of, you know, that the world is a bigger place and there's more out there. And I remember she very wisely said, you know, they're just going to see what you do. They're just going to watch.
Right.
And I thought, this is so great that we can bring our kids to this sort of event. And they get a chance to watch and to participate and to see what it's like to really be a part of something like this.
Yeah, to watch and participate and be a part of. And for me, it's really special because it's, I don't know how to say this, it's a place that feels very aligned with my heart, and I feel really comfortable to have my kids there and to have them interacting with whoever and feel like it's a safe place for everybody to be as they are.
Oh, absolutely. I love that you said that. That's so true. Safe and always. You know, it's not just safe physically, which of course they are because everyone there is, you know, watching out for them, but also just emotionally.
Yes. 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 Kind of reminds me of practice.
It's like practice plus we get all the music and the painting and the food and the, you know.
Yes.
All of that. The dancing.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
I was particularly moved this year, too, by the African dancing.
Uh-huh.
There was something just about, you know, the stories that, I forget her name, but the wonderful teacher, the story she was telling us about being awake and then what it means to be a village and to be dancing and in movement together.
Yes. Yes. So her
and
name
then
is
looking around. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say her name is Jackie for people who weren't there. And maybe you could give a little more background about what you saw in that experience with her for people who don't have any context.
Well, one of the things that Jackie was talking about is what it means for a village to really be together. And that one of the ways that in Africa they come together is through dancing and movement. And that naturally raises the energy level and the spirits. And I myself was watching she's just great at getting us all up and everybody participating and it really just felt like our whole, like we were, everybody was, I think, projecting already in a good mood, but then it just really raised the whole level of excitement and this feeling of being in something together and being connected.
Yeah, real sense of community and participation. And I love what Jackie shared about their greeting to each other in the morning, you know, when they see each other. And
yes.
I'm not going to give you the African version, first because I can't remember it, and two because I probably couldn't pronounce it. And and so the translation is, are you awake?
Are you awake?
Because what's the point of talking to somebody if they're not awake yet?
I have told that story to so many of my friends, and although I can't remember the African words either, unfortunately, but I love that.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So
and I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I was just so struck by that that whole question of are you awake and how we all model that for one another.
Yes.
It's so beautiful.
I think it would be a really wonderful tradition to adopt over here.
No.
Before we start speaking, first I want to check in. Are you awake? Are you here? Are you present? Yes. So tell me a little bit about what it was like to be around Teresa.
Oh, I'm so happy to tell you what that was like. Because actually, there's a small story before I met Teresa, which is that every morning I do this thing called a 10-10 list, and I put 10 things I'm grateful for and 10 things that I want to invite into my life. And several weeks before even ever meeting Teresa, for some reason on the list, I just started putting, I want to have a more open-hearted sort of generosity, giving from a real authentic place of open-heartedness.
Yeah.
And I was on my list for a long time. And, you know, after Teresa came here, I felt like that was answered, that there was this real sense of something about meeting her and hearing her tell the stories about the children and the men and women in Africa and the sewing cooperative and the roof project. There was something about it that just completely opened me up in a new way. So,
wow.
So what is really happening over there?
Yes. I project what you're talking about is a real tangible kind of sense of what that is.
Yeah, I've always appreciated the program and certainly been involved from the periphery, you know, by participating and making donations. But something really happened in meeting her that I just felt like something got bridged.
Yes.
And I keep thinking of the metaphor of that, like she was literally here as a bridge for us.
Yes, indeed. That's my experience as well. I was talking to someone else about the same thing. And I always, for some reason, picture it on a map as a kind of a little line or a connection between those of us over here and those of us in Africa. And it's always a strong line. And it seems like with Teresa coming over, it just got thicker and wider and deeper and more substantial.
Yes.
I don't know how else to describe it, but for me, it was a very tangible connection and representation of the work that's being done. And for me, it was a real joy to be at one of the presentations where Sherry and Teresa and Jen were all talking, because as I heard them talk, it's like three facets of the jewel, just like the three facets of Buddhism, each of them talking from their own perspective, but really, I project, coming from the same place about what it is that we want to do in the world and how we want to be.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And the thing, too, that I saw that happened because I was at one of the events as well and afterwards was sharing some of the stories that all three of them were telling. And I was sharing them with some friends. And it was amazing to me, like some of these friends came forward and donated to the project. And I said, oh, I wish you could have heard Teresa talk. And they said, well, we don't need to because you're sharing the stories. And we could really hear it.
Yes.
And I just love that their stories were so powerful.
Yes, such that in their retelling that you embody that spirit and people can see that.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Can I share with you a quick idea that Jen had put out earlier?
Absolutely.
Well, when we were talking about the great effect that having Teresa here has had, I know on me, and she was saying the same thing, and now hearing you speak, and we were saying, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could somehow get a lot of the members of the Sangha who had the opportunity to be in Teresa's presence and to meet her to maybe come up with just a small story or a quote or something to let her know how important that visit was to us. And we might even be able to, like, each send in a photograph so she can see our faces. And maybe we could put together a book or something to send to her.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
So, you know, perhaps if, you know, if it all comes together, maybe something will be coming out soon about doing something like that.
Wonderful, wonderful. And for me, that would be a real chance to express my gratitude and appreciation for her huge willingness to make a journey across many miles and many cultures. And, yeah, it's just amazing.
I know. And also, I was thinking if she could see our faces and then she could know that we're all still sort of with her, you know, even though we're so, you know, far away in distance that way, but we'd be right there with her in another way.
Yes, yes. I love that idea. And I'll look forward to the invitation.
I hope so, yeah. Should we tell people how much the event raised?
Yes, please. Thank you for reminding me. I almost forgot.
I know, because it's so exciting. And I know that money's still coming in. I still have people who I know who are sending in some money.
Yeah.
But I heard that right now we're at $90,000.
Yes, $90,000 and counting.
And counting.
And I'm sure that $100,000 is going to appear very soon.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we'll surpass it.
Yes. Wonderful. Sherry, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Michael.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. I'm in the same state as you two.
Oh, good.
Yep, wildly enthusiastic. Two things about it. I love that that idea of everybody sending in a picture and a quote and that sort of thing, maybe even making it into a little book for Teresa. I think that's just a fabulous idea.
Yes.
And I loved listening to you two talk about being there with the kids, because that was the thing that struck me, I think, most, actually, this time. And I think possibly one of the reasons is because a number of the kids who've been around since the beginning or close to the beginning are kind of turning into grown-ups. and they hit those stages where all of a sudden, you know, they shoot up and they go from being little kids to being in that, you know, halfway point. And I was having trouble recognizing them because they just changed so much in the last year. And I thought that what a wonderful feeling that is. You know, part of what I love most about practice, just practice, Buddhism, is the that sense of people having done this century after century after century, all over the world. People are doing the same thing that we're doing now. And to see that kind of played out with children who were, you know, arrived as babies, which we would expect. as Sherry said, you know, you're pushing them around in the stroller, and then all of a sudden they're up on their little pins, and they're going around, and then pretty soon, you know, they're preteens, and then they're teenagers, and then they're off to college, and they're coming back bringing their friends, and it's just a great, I don't know what feeling above all else, but just there's something about that continuity and taking our place in that long line of people who have been doing this around the world for many, many centuries.
Yeah, what comes to mind as you say that is the responsibility or opportunity to participate and to practice and to make that available.
Mm-hmm. And that realization that these children really are having a marvelous opportunity, as we all are, but to grow up in a family with parents who are making the best effort they can to, as you were talking about earlier, wake up and to participate and take responsibility and just sort of be devoted to being the best people that they can be. And that has to have a profound effect on these children. So I'm eager to see as it goes along. Of course, I was talking with one person there on Saturday whose son, when I first met her, was kind of starting junior high, I think.
Okay.
He just had his 40th birthday.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a bit of a jolt.
Yes.
And, of course, that's a wonderful thing, too, to think of the people in the Sangha, those who have been there since our particular part of this began, and that they're still there. And they're still showing up for these events, and now they're bringing their grandkids, and it's good.
It's a good deal. It's a good deal. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, we have many callers here.
Oh, good, good. Let's talk to him, Michael.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Michael. This is Chris from Seattle.
Hey, Chris.
Hi.
I can't believe it's already 6 weeks.
I know. I'm going to start marking your days off on my calendar.
Good.
I can chart this in some other way than, has it really been 6 weeks?
For some reason, this particular one seems to have flown by for me, but there it is.
Uh-huh. Well, what's going on?
Well, I'm going to report back. As you may recall, last time, just before the call, I was trying to work with my kids who are fighting and trying to help them in some way so we could enjoy our time together. And you gave me the suggestion of just asking them what they need, essentially, and asking them how I can help, because I was pretty much, at least at that particular time, being not a help.
Uh-huh.
And so I've been doing that. And it's interesting what's been happening. Part of me wanted it to be like a cure.
Yes, of course.
and control them and have it all work out. But what I found was that with varying degrees of success, put the word success in quotes, what ended up happening really was that it would just help me disidentify. I'd be thinking, okay, they're doing this. Okay, I'm going to ask them, how can I help? Or it would give me just a half a step back to take a breath and say, well, how can I help? And it would just sort of engage me in a way other than knock it off or whatever. Does that make sense?
Oh, it absolutely does. In fact, when you say that, I go back to the conversation that was going on a little while ago, the good news, when Jackie was talking about the greeting in Africa, and
mm-hmm.
You know, we're looking at it and saying, wouldn't that be a great thing if you ask somebody, are you awake, before you engage with them? It would be fabulous for us to do that, because it would require us to check in. We couldn't
mm-hmm.
remember to ask. Of course, I mean, for them, I'm sure it's like good morning is for us. It's not a real flag for them
mm-hmm.
to wake up. But that kind of, I'm going to do something that brings conscious awareness to this situation, I have to move to conscious awareness in order to remember to do that. So there, that's a huge contribution, regardless of what happens with anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that was the big thing. The other thing I wanted to...
Well, can I ask you about that first?
Yeah. Please.
What happened with them? Did it seem to jolt them at all, at least initially, or?
It's hard to say. Yes, not. But I wouldn't say it's a jolt, but they would sort of pause a little bit and it seemed to make it a little easier for them to talk about what was happening between the two of them.
Good.
It may just be, you know, she pinched me, no, I didn't, and then back and forth. But it does seem to give them a little bit of a pause to stop and well, this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then often, and then it would, a couple times I know it ended with one of them saying, oh, I'm sorry, and then it would move on from there. It was nice.
Yeah, that's great. In this ongoing pursuit of engaging with people, when you were talking about the she pinched me, no, I didn't, and I've watched so many sets of kids do that routine.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, as a parent or as an adult, you really have no idea, you know.
No, you don't.
You have no idea. You hate to think one of your kids is a manipulative little liar and the other, you know, but, I mean, something's happened, and we'll just never know what that was. But I just had this image of you saying, okay, well, in order to end this war, how about if both of you pinch me? And then, you know, not that hard, easy. Remember, I'm old. But just to, you know, to kind of divert the whole thing, just throw a, you know, a real stumbling block in their momentum.
I'll do that for sure.
Yeah, something that...
They'd get a kick out of that.
Yeah, they would get a kick out of that. And it would break the energy, which is what we're always going for. That's, you know, whether it's an emotional role that we get on or it's a thought pattern that we get locked into, but the attention gets fixated on something. And then it just, you know, that thing just rolls along and gains momentum. So that's what we're trying to do with ourselves all the time when we attempt to disidentify. We're trying to, you know, stop that train. And so this way you can kind of step in there, and it would probably be fun, I hope it would be fun, to come up with creative ways to do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can get creative on that.
Yeah.
So I was telling my reflective listening buddy not too long ago, after an exasperating afternoon, that, you know, I sometimes envy my childless friends, but and I do, and that's fine, but not that often really. And the thing is, I was never even come to this parenting. In some ways, I was so unprepared for parenting, well, in every way, and having kids brought up all kinds of stuff for me, and it was a big motivator. For both my wife and I to eventually find this practice.
Yep.
And it's been a godsend.
Yeah.
So
it truly. With I think if we're honest and stepped back enough, every difficult situation in life, we can see when we are stepped back that it brought us closer to a commitment to living in the present instead of off in unconsciousness. And so no matter how miserable it might get, the fact that it's calling me to consciousness makes it the perfect thing to be in my life.
Yes, and they're there, and they're bringing up all the stuff I didn't even know was there with me.
Precise.
And it's just, you know,
I think that's why we don't know. I think that's why we get all these ideas about, you know, you're going to meet that one person and you're going to fall in love and then you're just going to live happily ever after. And I think that we are taught that because otherwise we would never try to have a relationship with one other person. Same with children. You know, we have all these Walt Disney movies about how great it is to have a family. Because the truth of the matter is, if people knew how really difficult it is, they might get talked out of doing it. And there are so many gifts and blessings that come with the struggle.
Something else I can blame Disney for.
Yeah. And, you know, those gifts and blessings don't come in spite of the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
They come with the struggle in exactly the way you're saying. You would just not go there if you really knew what you were getting into.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Truly. And the one thing I wanted to throw out there was that my radio broke last week at work, and I'm in a vehicle for several hours a day, and I couldn't listen to my open air all day. And boy, did that make a difference. That's about 3 days. It built up slowly during the week, and then by Friday, I was just kind of rah, 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 rah. So I went out and bought another one post-haste, and so I could plug in. It was like taking a bath.
Oh, wow. Well, that is quite a commercial.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and that, just to underline it, that at first, it's fine. I don't need practice. You know, I'm really steeped in it. It's fine. Day one. Day two, a little more distracted, a little less present, the voices are louder. Day three, they've pretty much got me. And if I don't do something quick, they're gonna drag me down under the whatever truck.
Yes.
Yeah. Good. Good reminder.
All right.
All right.
Uh-huh.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Sherry. Good night, and good night, Michael.
You're very welcome.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Chris. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Todd calling from Calgary, Canada.
Well, Todd, how are you?
Well, up and down.
Uh-oh.
We spoke in July, and you gave me some very helpful guidance then, and it's so interesting what you mentioned about marriage and how we are conditioned to believe the fairy tale ending, which I believed for so many years and didn't marry actually till quite late in life. Only in my late 40s did I marry.
Uh-huh.
And this is you're right, it's extremely challenging. I love what you said about the blessings come with the challenges or the difficulties, not in spite of. And that was comforting to hear.
Yeah, because conditioning would like us to believe, if I weren't in this situation, everything would be fine. And of course, we know that's not true.
It's not true. That's the process.
Yeah.
I'm just, since the deepening practice retreat in April, and there was enough, it's not what, it's how, within that retreat,
mm-hmm.
Conditioning has been so, just these offensive attacks, I've never experienced, maybe because my awareness has increased, I'm guessing, but I've just never experienced this depth of conditioning, just bringing these waves of attacks. And the greatest process right now is attacking my marriage.
Uh-huh.
Because it is
sure.
The same exact thing you said.
Yeah.
If I weren't married, if I were to just leave this marriage, which is only 3 years old, and then I wouldn't have all this struggle, I wouldn't have all this pain and suffering and... But I know it's just a duality, because the minute I'm out the door, it's going to go, why did you leave? I can't believe you left.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's the best thing that's ever happened to you.
Yeah.
You're an idiot. And I know I see the duality, and I see the conditioning.
Yeah.
But the process is so interesting, because it gets me identified,
mm-hmm.
and I think it definitely is a small child, and then the mentoring comes in. But as I'm identified, I think since deepening practice retreat, I know I'm identified. So there is that separation,
yeah.
But I sometimes can't get disidentified, but I know I'm identified.
Yes.
Whereas prior to deepening practice, I didn't even know I was identified.
Yes. Boy.
So it's another level, but it's maybe you can give me some guidance. I know there's all the tools, and I have my posters, and I have all the tools, but I can go, I can go a couple days where I am just in it.
Well, yes. Because it knows exactly the magic words that are going to get us. In, as an individual, it knows just the phrase to get you at just the right moment when you're feeling, you know, whatever it is. So it's difficult for us to go up against it when it already has a foothold.
Yes.
You know, and it's kind of what Steve was talking about. Chris. At first it's okay, and then time goes by, and it's just like it's just wearing you down, wearing you down, wearing you down, wearing you down.
It does.
Pretty soon it's gotcha. So there is a little trick. There is a little trick for it, and it's just a variation on one that I'm sure you already know and use, but it's the reason, of course, that it's successful at getting us is that we don't want it to. But you're at a place in your practice now where you actually would do well to know exactly how it's doing what it's doing.
Yes.
And so the position to take up is one right in the middle of it. And I like to do things like, you know, get my notebook and maybe get two different colored pens so that the conversation can go on. And so I'm going to say, okay, all right, so all of the problems with my life are my wife. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So let's make a list.
That's the conversation.
Yeah, let's make a list. Now, what is she doing, and what exactly is wrong with her? Okay.
Yeah.
And as you know, it'll get very quiet, but it has to come back, and you're going to be listening for it. So you're going to start writing down every single thing that it does,
love it.
Everything it says, every interpretation of a look, an emotion, a whatever, everything that it's doing in its campaign to get rid of her.
That's it. It's a campaign, yeah.
It is. Oh, it's definitely a campaign.
Oh,
and I
yeah.
can promise you she'll be off the hook in no time flat, because it's just going to shift over to the next thing. And probably what you can expect is a little respite.
Uh-huh.
So it'll take a little break, you know.
I'd like that.
Yeah, yeah. But you don't want to let your guard down, because
no, that's
what
right.
it's going to do then is just slide in with the next thing that is an external to you that is the reason that you're suffering. Because of course, what we're all meant to believe is that I'm suffering because of that. Not because of it. Okay? So the constant is, if I suffer, it's because of that conversation in my head, pure and simple.
Yeah.
So that conversation is busy directing me to, no, it's him, it's her, it's them, it's it. Yeah.
Oh, that's exactly it, Sherry. It's exactly it. And you know, I just take comfort from your books and the radio shows and all the other tools that are provided in this practice, that all my experiences are exactly what you have laid out by way of, you know, the introduction of the Buddha, is that it's exactly my experience. This happens and then that happens, and this process and that happens, and how and why. And so it's like, that's it. And I go back to the tools, and it's attacking my marriage, my wife right now, and my practice, the two kind of simultaneously.
Uh-huh. Oh, well,
so
that's
it's
good.
It's sort of like when...
Because
you can't
seek comfort from her against your practice, and you can't use your practice as comfort against her. So just, take them both out at once, and poof.
That's right, because when I kind of catch on with the wife thing, right, and I see, it's content, and okay, I'm disidentifying, then it hits my practice. Because conditioning goes, whoa, he's got that. Ooh, let's now go his practice. And then when I see that it's hitting my practice, it shifts back to the marriage. So it's really been interesting.
Exactly.
You know, because it's this little teeter-totter, right? And I'm just sort of in the middle.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. Well, actually, through the magic of all of this stuff, you're on one end, then you're on the other. And what it's like is whichever end you're on thumps to the ground, because there's nothing holding up the other end, and then you thump to the ground on the other end.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that's what it's doing, is just hit you there until finally we could just get so dizzy and miserable that we're really ready to quit.
Well, it's definitely, like you say, it gets you. I've talked me out of quite a bit of consistency, I've got to admit, recently in my practice. It's like kind of recommitting. It reminds me of, which I've done many, many times now, is the 30-day retreat and making a change for good. So, hi.
You can see me?
Yeah, I'm just on my way. Oh. Okay, thanks, Sharon. Oh, speaking of.
Right. Oh, you better go now.
Yeah, I have a commitment.
Yeah.
But yes, and it reminds me of the recommitment.
Mm-hmm.
Just recommitting, because you're right. We get our head above the stew, the pot, and then we sink back down.
That's right. And so
when we
sink back down, that's our best opportunity to explore the stew.
The stew, right, is what you're talking about, the tube, the writing, right?
That's it.
That's the stew.
Yes, because what it wants us to do is be down there in the stew, just desperate because we can't get out. And the desperate to get out is what's keeping us down. So if you just take out, this is a funny image in the stew, but take out your little pad of paper and your pen and start saying, okay, let's see, now there goes a carrot. All right, so I can see that, and you're so busy charting this whole thing that before you know it, you pop out.
Oh, I can't wait. I got so many journals. I got journals and pens, and I'm all ready to go.
Good.
All ready to go. And I better go, or else the content's going to be riled.
Uh-huh. Right.
So,
okay. Okay.
It's going to be additional,
later.
Yes. Well, thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks. Good night.
We'll talk soon. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, that conversation on recommitment reminds me of a passage in Making a Change for Good, which I just love.
What is it?
Can I read it?
Yeah, please.
Make a commitment to meditation or anything else. Follow through, have something come up to interfere, break your commitment, and commit again. When we're simply present to the whole process, quote, failure, unquote, and, quote, lack of self-discipline, unquote, are beside the point. Letting yourself down is beside the point. Being disappointed is beside the point. Feeling discouraged is beside the point. Those reactions are designed to stop you. Recommitting is the point.
Wow. That's it, isn't it?
That's powerful.
It is powerful. It is powerful. And and we can see, if that's true, which it is, why conditioning works so hard to convince us that if you stop once, that's it. Okay, you're a failure, you're a loser, you're done for, there's no sense in. But once we get it that, no, just start over. So, I'm going to walk to New York. And the first time I stop, the voices kick in. Well, that's it. You're finished. No, just pick up that foot and set it down and start walking again. Sooner or later, you're going to get there.
It's like we have a free pass to start over.
Oh, always.
Yeah.
And the beauty of it, the thing that makes this so, is that all of life starts over moment by moment by moment. There, it is an absolute illusion that there is anything being carried forward. The only thing that's being carried forward is the story, the made-up imaginary story that conditioning is attempting to drag from moment to moment.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not like this is some sort of something that we just made up because it makes us feel better. I mean, it's hard science. The entire universe is new in every split second.
Yes.
So why shouldn't we be able to start again? We could, if we were really clear about what's going on, we would realize there is no, just drop the again. It's start. So even if I'm, say I'm out exercising, and I think, I quit. If I think, oh, now I have to start again, then that connects two events, three events that really have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
I was running, now I'm walking, now I'm standing still, now I'm walking, now I'm running.
Yes.
Much
so,
better. And I think it's always better to go with what actually is than than what conditioned mind wants to try to convince us is.
Yes.
Much happier.
Reminds me of a book title I know, Nothing Happens Next.
Uh-huh. Yeah, precisely. There is no next. Yeah, that's good. Whoever wrote that, you know.
What's the phrase? Very close to enlightenment.
Very close to enlightenment.
Wonderful. I'm enjoying this a lot, Sherry. We're going to take a sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Thank you.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of...
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
You know, Michael.
Yes.
The good part about that song, there are many good parts about that song and about Simply Celebrate, but one of the best parts is we do swim in a river of joy.
We do swim in a river of joy.
That's we're back to that. That's what's true. That's
uh-huh.
what is so.
Yes.
And then there's the endless conversation designed to distract us from that fact. But
yes.
when that conversation falls away, even if it's just for a split second, we realize where we are is swimming in a river of joy.
Yes, and it's so helpful for you to identify that as a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Because then we can accept it as such and look for it.
Yeah, yeah. And once we tip over into, wait a minute, what if what I've been taught is true isn't, and what I've been taught isn't true is? I mean, let's just look at the world that way for a moment. Do the facts line up behind that? Do they, you know, can I see how that would, and of course, not very long, we realize, yes, the only thing that is creating this difficulty is that conversation. Without it, no.
No problem.
No problem. Now, that doesn't mean that life doesn't happen, because it does. But without that conversation, it's not a problem. Yes, we're going to die. Yes, we're going to get sick. Yes, if we live long enough, everybody we love will die. Yes, everything is going to go before it's all over. Yes, all of that is true. It's always been true. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
There's never been a different life from the one that is available to us. Yeah? There's
yeah.
never been a life in which people lived forever.
We have no evidence of it.
No. No. Yep. That's a better way to say it. I mean, maybe somewhere in some plane of existence, but we're not there.
Right.
So in the world that we know, things come into existence and they go out of existence.
Yes.
And that's just how it is. So without the conversation, it's not a problem. With the conversation, even the fact that we are in existence is perceived as a problem.
Yes, let alone the river of joy that we swim in.
Right. Somebody else want to talk to us? Or
many folks.
Shall I just rattle on here?
Many folks. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Hey, Catherine.
Hi.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
How are you?
I am very good. I am looking at something that's kind of painful, but
uh-huh.
I'm okay. A pattern of conditioning manifested itself last week. And the pattern is that I get angry and I get in a heated exchange with someone and then I get in trouble.
Yeah.
And what changed this time is that I listened to a recording of one of your workshops in which you talked about projection and payoff.
Uh-huh.
And so I started looking at my projections there, and it was really hard to own.
Isn't it? Can we just stop and underline that? It is so hard when we have been taught that X is doing Y, and that makes them a really bad person, and it's true, and it's real, and we should be upset about it, and then we have to bring it all back and own it ourselves. It is very difficult.
It was really hard.
Yep.
But I did. I did see it.
Very helpful and illuminating, isn't it?
Very. Really, really was. And I also looked at payoff. And part of that is being a victim. Part of that, I think, is the drama created. And what happens with this is, you know, someone becomes very indignant and lashes out, expresses the anger, and then somebody else comes in to bear the repercussions.
Yeah, so you that know, person creates a big rah-rah and leaves.
Right.
And then the person who's left there had nothing to do with it, but is now in the middle of the mess.
Right, and feels ashamed of it, and feels shamed by other people. This is so familiar. This has been happening since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it's gotten me in trouble at work. This time, it happened at work. I didn't get fired, but I did get transferred. And the people at this place don't want me back there, so I can't go back. So I'm transferred to another place, and I'm making the same money and all that. So
that's kind of miraculous, isn't it?
That I wasn't fired, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That when people have that strong a reaction, that they didn't take advantage of a moment to retaliate. Which I'm guessing they could have.
Right. Yes, they could have. Yeah.
You know, just when we're ready to write people off as rotten so-and-sos, they do something that we have to admit is really kind or good or decent.
Really kind. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. So I have a worry that it's going to happen again.
Sure.
I'm worried.
I don't blame you.
And yeah, and I don't want it to happen again. So I'm wondering what would be the best way to, I mean, if I, you know, if I vow this will never happen again, that's an open invitation for it to happen again.
Oh,
so.
Absolutely. So, you know, it sounds as if you have a pretty good feel for the progression.
I did this time, yes. Yes.
So you were watching it this time, and you could see how it was building its case and shutting down to anything rational or reasonable or kind and just building to the explosion.
Right, and I didn't see it at the time, but I see it now. I did not see it at the time.
Uh-huh.
I was very identified. And I didn't see.
You were just believing the voices saying that you were right about this.
Yes.
Uh huh.
Yes.
Well, that is a very scary place. I mean, because of course the only hope that you have in this is to see how it happens. And so, not being able to see how it happens, there's no way for you to intervene.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really alarming, because I would bet you don't have too many more openings for this to happen.
Right.
So where you live, now I know nothing about this, so maybe you can research this and let me know. We can talk again. Might you find an anger management program. And here's what I'm thinking. Because those folks are, their particular skill is in helping a person understand how the buildup to the explosion happens.
Okay.
Now, practice will do the same thing, but what's required is for you to watch it happening.
Okay, so the fact that I see it now isn't enough.
No, because you didn't see it then.
I didn't see it then, okay.
So
okay.
If, you know, if it were, so a person is going along and all of a sudden has a heart attack, and there were all kinds of signs that this was coming on, but the person wasn't paying attention, missed them, didn't know it, whatever. They have, seeing it in retrospect is not going to help them recognize it when it happens again. Because I would imagine, since this has been going on since childhood, you've been through this sequence any number of times,
mm-hmm.
and yet you didn't recognize it as the sequence.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't recognize it as the process, because that process I can promise you is exactly the same every time. What the voices in your head say, what's being projected, what you believe about the other people, what it all means, what you have to do, the feelings, everything is exactly the same every time. And there was nobody there to say, hey, get a grip on yourself here. You know, you're getting ready to kill somebody over something that isn't going to matter a fig tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Is this true? Is what I'm saying your experience?
Yeah, I think I'm starting to shut down. I don't know what's going on.
Well, I do.
I'm starting to just totally just.
I do. I know exactly what's going on, and what's going on is that the system that does this now, what you know is this is a karmic system that is designed to put you in the place where you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed to keep you isolated, feeling victimized, feeling ashamed. Okay, it's done it over
mm-hmm.
and over and over, and it gets the same results every time.
Mm-hmm.
It has no interest in you seeing through it.
Mm-hmm.
It has an interest in perpetuating this. So as we start looking at how this happens, then what happens to you is that you begin to shut down so that the information doesn't come in.
Mm.
Okay? Now, fortunately, the really good news about this is that, is there an awful hum on this phone?
Is there?
Oh. No.
I'm starting to hear something too, yeah.
Okay. There, I think it's better now. So, fortunately, you can listen to the archive of this.
Uh-huh.
And you can hear it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I can promise you that's what's going on. If you were just going to call in and say, this thing happened, I've seen it, blah, 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 that would be one thing. That's fine and acceptable behavior. But when I'm suggesting that you take a next step to thwart it from doing what it's getting ready to do to you again, it's not interested in you taking in that information.
Right. Okay. Yeah, because I'm getting scared. Somebody's getting really scared.
Well, that's ego.
Yeah.
That's ego getting scared that you're going to see through this and you're going to let it go and you're going to leave this nonsense behind and be free of it. Okay? Because the
uh-huh.
part of you who feels ashamed at having gone through this one more time is certainly not going to be afraid that you're going to be successful in thwarting it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
the only thing that's going to be afraid is something that doesn't want change.
Mm-hmm.
So that's egocentric mm-hmm. karmic conditioning. All right, so that would be my best encouragement to you, that you make your way. It's kind of a three-prong approach. One you find a system, a program, a something that with, you know, people that you can work with on this. Okay?
Okay.
When you have set that up, you write a letter to the people in your old spot, owning the whole thing, saying what you've recognized, what you're going to do, and apologizing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You write,
okay.
You send that letter along with another letter to the people where you are currently that says, this is what happened, this is what I've realized, this is what I'm going to do. I don't have any expectation or hope that I won't repeat this behavior. Since it seems to be out of my control, I will just tell you that I'm working as diligently as I can.
Okay.
Can you picture it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, nobody inside who's in the ego-centric karmic conditioning group is going to want you to do any of this.
Right. You're absolutely right about that.
But it is your only hope of not winding up in the same place again.
And, okay, my boss has asked me not to contact the people at this other, not to contact them about this.
Okay, well, you could write the letter and give it to your boss.
Okay. Okay.
And then if he or she wants to pass that information along, that's fine, but the point is you have done it.
I see. Okay.
You
okay.
have done it. You have owned it. You've taken full responsibility for it. You've made a commitment to be different in the future, a commitment to work on this. So, you know, Catherine, it's no different from being an alcoholic. You know, you
mm-hmm.
showed up drunk at work. And suddenly, you know, you've been showing up drunk at work all your life, and suddenly
mm-hmm.
you get it. You get what's going on. My God, I'm an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And so
the first
thing to do is to take to own it, to take responsibility for it, to realize that it's you. It's not you're not reacting to the behaviors of horrible people, as those voices would like you to believe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not that that's happening because of what people are being or doing or saying or... That's not the case. That's what the voices would like you to believe. But
mm-hmm.
it's not the case any more than you get drunk because... And then fill in the...
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Someone's clinging to being the victim, and it's time to take responsibility.
Oh, it really is, because what you can see very clearly in this is the victim-perpetrator relationship. I'm a victim, therefore I get to victimize everybody
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm.
Well... No.
Mm, yeah,
as a matter of fact, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it would be really hard to imagine anybody who was the recipient of what it sounds like you delivered having any idea at all that you are the victim in the situation.
Yeah. Yes,
when
I agree.
Yeah, when they see themselves as just being thoroughly abused by you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not, it's kind of been the theme of this show. This is how we wake up. This is how we get it, that we need to take a different direction. It's not that we would be fine if these things weren't going on. These things in our lives are the route that we're taking to being fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you get to the other side of this, you're going to be a transformed human being. Without this, what would have motivated you to take the steps that are required to make that sort of transformation?
Yeah, there wouldn't be anything.
There wouldn't be anything. And it doesn't mean you'd be a better person. It simply means you would have been a person who didn't transform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know,
yeah,
there are lots of people whose karma is such that they can just kind of cruise through life right below the radar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't envy that. I don't admire that. You know, I'd rather fake
right.
it. And I think you would too, or we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right. Right.
Painful, hard,
okay.
difficult, yeah. But it's no more painful, hard, difficult to wake up and face this than to go through life in unconsciousness acting it out.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking this time that actually my boss has been so kind to me that I've been thinking this time, this is a real opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let this slip through your fingers because she's being really kind.
Well, and from what
and
you...
It's, go ahead.
Take it in.
Yes.
How can you be a victim when you have acted in this way and somebody meets you with kindness?
Yeah.
So then when those voices kick in again, you can just say, that's utter hogwash.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be critical for you really to take that in. Because they're going to want to start in immediately making a case for what a victim you are. And if you can stop and really get it, that if you had been able to be as kind to those people in that last situation as your boss is being to you in this situation, the world would be a different place.
And that's what I want to be.
That's right. Of course it is. Of course it is. So, when they start talking about closing down and being afraid, and it's to just say, yeah, it was hard for Gandhi too. The Buddha struggled too. Those are the footsteps I want to walk in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Now, you're going to check back in because you got a program.
Yes, I will.
Right? Okay.
I promise. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And listen to the
okay.
archive.
I will.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Right. Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you. Good night.
Night.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Ewer. Sherry, that was very inspiring to me.
Oh, it's just, it's so hard. It just, it's, again, you know, it's just such a heroic thing people are doing to go up against this and face it and take responsibility and make different choices. It's just huge.
Yeah, it is huge. We have about 5 more minutes, and we have 3 more callers. We may not get to all of them, and so I will invite you now. Same old invitation every week. Please join us again next week. Call in early. Call in early. Next call, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry and Michael, it's Rebecca.
Hey there.
Hi.
Hi.
What's going on?
Boy, this has really been an inspiring show. And I've hit a little edge, and no, it's a big edge that I just hit. And let me just tell you briefly what happened. You remember, you know, I've been writing. Remember that?
Yes.
And this morning I was looking over what I've written, and I was just enjoying it so much. And the thought occurred to me, oh, I want to share it with this friend of mine. And the thought of sharing, if anyone else reading this, just brought up terror and all kinds of, and I can, it's creeping in now. I can hear it in my voice and feel it. So there's the edge.
And now, is it okay not to bring your friend into this?
Yeah, and what happens? What happens is this internal battle of I want someone to share this with. I want to share this, and I want to. There's a part of me that wants this to be a bigger conversation. What I'm writing about, it just wants it to be bigger. And then there's a part of me, of course, that's terrified of that, and it's like accusing this other part, like, look, now you've ruined everything. Now, you know, we were having a grand old time writing with just me, and now you bring this up, and you just ruin everything, you know. And so that's kind of the dialogue that comes in.
Now, who is that? I'm suspicious.
Of which one?
That you've ruined everything.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, last time I talked to you, you suggested I ask this part of me that's doing the writing, kind of, you know, what guidance she would say. And so I did that, and about this issue, and what came up was, nobody can hurt you. Basically, it was saying nobody's reaction, good or bad, can hurt you, really. That what we've created is just fun and perfect in and of itself. And basically, that was kind of what that was.
Okay.
And that did feel really. Yeah, go ahead.
So, okay, so somebody is having fun doing this. Somebody else wants it to now be a larger conversation.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and so why, the part that is a flag for me is, why does it have to be either or? I mean, the person who's having fun just doing this can continue to have fun just doing this. There's an assumption by that person or by somebody else that having anybody else know about this is going to be a negative.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yes, I thought that was obvious.
Well, yes, but what the reason I'm pointing it out is it doesn't have to be. In other words,
yeah.
You could set it up in any way you wanted to set it up. You could say, this is very vulnerable for me. You know, I'd love to continue, you know, I'd love to make this part of a bigger conversation. I'm not opening it up so that I can get a bunch of criticism.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if it's a conversation, you say what you say, then I say what I say. You say what you say, I tell you what's wrong with what you say.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've...
And...
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I've written a little bit. And
yeah.
one of the things that I've learned is not to ask people for their opinion. Because they always have one. And so many people think asking for your opinion means, tell me what's wrong with this.
Yeah, and when I was thinking about sharing this with my friend, I thought about the preface that I would put. That I'm not asking for any edits. I'm not asking for anything other than there's just some part of me that wants to share this. That's all, really.
Yes. Yeah. And you could ask for that.
Yeah. for basically just asking, can I share this? And
yeah.
That's
yeah. And you know, if down the road you have it triggers thoughts in you that you would like to express about yourself. It's like when we're in a workshop, or particularly when I'm in a workshop where there's a bunch of people who are not used to how we do practice. And invariably, they want to talk about what somebody else has just said. And I always stop them and say, no, it doesn't have anything to do with what that person just said. You talk about what's going on with you. What is this in you? And it's the same issue.
Yeah, it is exactly. And what it's gonna call forth in me, it feels like, is creating that privileged environment within myself that I'm not gonna be projecting onto everybody what everybody's gonna be thinking and saying, and you know, as if there is even an everybody, just her, even, you know,
right.
The person that I share this with.
Yes. And you could set it up in such a way that where you're clear. This is really, I'm feeling really vulnerable about this. Can you, if you're willing to read it, can you do that without needing to give me information about, you know, your opinions or whatever? Is that okay?
Yeah, and I know she can. You know, I know that. It's
yeah. And
it's really more about what I'm going to be bringing to it.
Well, yes, and a good experiment is limited. You can't experiment with everything all at once.
Right? Say more?
Well, it's important, I think, in an experiment to have some control over the variables.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put it out in that way and you see what happens, you'll learn something.
Oh, yeah.
You'll see more about who's there and what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what's motivating them, who are these characters. You'll see what the next step is. Then you'll take that next step and you'll see what's there. But if you just willy-nilly throw everything out there, then you don't really know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you a great big old target for conditioning.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna try a new recipe. I'm going to invite you over to dinner. Okay. And the scary part is to serve somebody a new recipe. I don't even care if you like it or don't like it. That's not the point. The point is, I'm having this little experiment about serving somebody a new recipe. Will you participate in that with me? Yes,
yeah.
I want to. No, I don't want to.
Yeah. So, well, I think we're out of time, so I'll save my next questions for another time, but this has given me plenty to...
Good. And the next thing about it is, if there is going to be any conversation with the two of you or with whomever, have it be a reflected conversation. Set up parameters.
Yeah.
You know, let's talk about this. I'll reflect what you say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect.
Good. I love experiments.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, just occurred to me what a miracle it is that we are all here today and all the times we've been together before.
Oh, isn't it the truth? Kind of with karma, makes me think I might have done something right.
Yes, great privilege for me, as always, and it's great to have you and the listeners and the callers, and each of us is essential.
Yeah, and it's good to remember that, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So we all say thank you to this person who's participating.
Yes. Thank you, Sherry.
Talk to you soon. Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye.